Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program.
Radio Tonic is produced out of Radio National, and they look at all sorts of issues, but one of these issues is about how you relate across cultures. And this is a piece about Samuel Katz. He's a guy who grew up a few miles from Manhattan in the United States, but there was a very large gulf between his Orthodox Jewish enclave in Brooklyn, where he lived, and the secular world that surrounded it. He was raised speaking Yiddish. Sam taught himself to read English at a public library, and over time he distanced himself from his religious upbringing. He's now pursuing a PhD in immunology. These days, Sam learned that the telling of his stories is a sort of a crossing over, and it helps him to liberate himself from his past. But it's also become a bit of a burden he can't shake. Here's Daniel A. Gross with Sam's story, Radio Tonic.
Listening to stories is never a passive act. The listener shapes the story and shapes the storyteller. Sam Katz remembers his first dinner party, the way that actors remember their first time on stage. That night, by accident, he found himself in front of an audience. Sam was 19 then, new to college and new to parties. He showed up at an apartment on Long Island, and he didn't really understand the conversations around him. They referenced TV shows he'd never seen and people he'd never met.
Like, you know, when you first learn a language, where you can get every third word. So you can be an outsider in the conversation, but you can't be part of it. And I was sitting there and slowly turning into myself, and somebody mentioned something about Saturday morning television.
Happy birthday, you thing from another world, you.
Oh, thank you.
And I said, well, my Saturdays, you know, we were keeping the Sabbath, so the rabbi was our entertainment that day.
Sam grew up an ultra-Orthodox Jew in Brooklyn. His first language was Yiddish, and his second was Hebrew. So it was no wonder that he didn't watch Saturday morning television. As he explained at the dinner party, he spent his childhood learning Jewish scripture.
And then I started saying, well, the only form of entertainment was these plays we'd have once a holiday, which was for only men. So all the characters in the play would be widowers and all the children orphans, and everybody only gives birth to sons on stage.
When Sam was ultra-Orthodox, all these dinner party details, nobody found them intriguing or surprising. They were his life. But that night, his life turned into his story. In front of college students who had grown up with video games and 90210, his story gave him a kind of power.
And I knew in my head that I can shift the weight of the room. I can start talking about my story, and the room will be mine. And I just had the place. I mean, it was wonderful, I have to admit it. You have all these years of loneliness and nobody hears you, and suddenly there's like this cornucopia of eyes, this cornucopia of attention that is just flowing at you. And it's hard not to be seduced by it. It's like those siren songs.
Sam was seduced by it. After that day, he did interviews with newspapers and TV and public radio. Ultra-Orthodox Jews seem mysterious to outsiders. They're steeped in tradition. They dress funny. They speak languages most Americans can't even recognize. Sam felt like telling his story was helping him escape the world he grew up in.
How else do we connect to people? I mean, we tell each other a story. But stories demand something. When you talk in a story, you borrow that person who went somewhere with you, and you need to take them to a certain place.
I produce radio. Stories structure my days. I look for narratives with punch and pop, the kind that end with a twist or go out with a bang. So when Sam told me all this, I felt like I knew what he meant. Stories help create closure. They help sort out the villains from the heroes. But on the other hand, they constrain. Stories have rules, and listeners have expectations. Sam was telling people what he wasn't. He wasn't an ultra-Orthodox Jew, not anymore, in the hopes that eventually they'd see him for what he was. It hasn't really worked out that way.
Okay, here's a question. Are you tired of talking about your religious background?
Yes, completely. I'm tired of how professional it's become. It's such a manual labor. Like, I know the question, I know the answer that's needed, I know the things that inspire the most curiosity, the things that get the most laughs, the things that get the most, really? No. Is that still really going on? Really? Every encounter is in the shadow of my story.
The irony of Sam's story of religious transition is that it started with stories. First, he had to teach himself to read them. When Sam was 10, his parents separated. Sam lived with his mother and sisters, who spoke English amongst themselves. That was the language of practical tasks, like paying the bills or shopping for clothes. After the divorce, Sam's mother couldn't afford an apartment in Brooklyn's Borough Park, where thousands of ultra-Orthodox, or Hasidic Jews, live and worship.
So we lived right on the border. But there was freedom. I mean, I knew nobody's watching me there. And right around the corner of where we moved was the Brooklyn Public Library.
Religion had taught Sam respect for the written word. Hasidic Jews call themselves people of the book. When an ultra-Orthodox Jew closes a Hebrew religious book, tradition says he has to kiss it. English wasn't like that.
It was kind of the equivalent of smoking, I guess. Like, if you spoke English, you were like a little bit of a bad boy.
Sam started by puzzling through his sister's books, with help from a dictionary. He liked Roald Dahl's books, but it was Harry Potter, who embarks on an epic journey into a new world, that Sam really related to. Sam was a brilliant student at his yeshiva, or Jewish school. He impressed his teachers, who encouraged him to become a rabbi one day. Yet Brooklyn sometimes felt like the cupboard underneath the stairs where Harry Potter is forced to live. Sam caught himself wondering if the secular world outside was somehow magical. Stories have that kind of power.
I decided to go to the library once. We had school every day from 7 in the morning to 9 at night, so the only day I had was Friday because of the Sabbath. So it was Friday afternoon. I go in, I'm wearing my long jacket, you know, the vest, the prayer shawl, the side curls.
He got funny looks from bystanders, but the librarian showed him around. Sam started reading about psychology because a famous Hasidic scholar had once studied the subject.
And I knew the line, and the line was clearly evolution. I mean, that was the line you do not cross.
When Sam first read the word evolution, he slammed the book shut. But he started wondering about it. He didn't think he'd fall for a dangerous idea like that. Not after all his religious training.
One of the few places where the outside world would penetrate inside the Hasidic enclave in Borough Park were city bus advertisements. Because we had no newspapers, no television, so nothing would come in. And one day, walking to Yeshiva, I see the city bus, and it says that there's a Darwin exhibit at the Museum of Natural History.
So he waited weeks for a free Sunday and caught a ride into the city. When he entered the cavernous main hall, he hardly noticed the dinosaur skeletons on display. He was trained in yeshiva to decode texts, so he started reading the walls.
I've never been in a place like that, where there are a bunch of different rooms and you just choose where to go. Like, my whole life was one room, and that was the study hall.
Sam examined Darwin's Galapagos finches, saw the way each beak was adapted to its environment. He was amazed.
I guess it was the first time I saw something that you don't see unless, you know, science makes you see it. Like in the Talmud, I study text, and I knew that if I stand long enough, I can see amazing things. And those beaks, like, I wouldn't have seen it.
Something you should know about Sam. He's a scientist. He studied biology and is preparing for a PhD in immunology, which means he can't go a day without using the principles of evolution. And that's why, all these years later, When Sam starts talking about the museum, he hears himself slow down. He feels himself lean forward, so this moment can sink in. He does it for our benefit, for his listeners, for you. Religion taught Sam to value books, but books led him to question religion. As a teenager at summer camp, he read in secret about neurology. He read about the blind spot, this part of the eye that can't see. It seemed like a flaw in the design of human beings. One afternoon, he was washing his hands for prayer.
And I put on my jacket, that kind of old black garb that people know. And I turned around to the window, and outside was a just dense, unweeded forest. And I suddenly realized that I haven't been believing in God for like 2 weeks. I'm not a believer. And it was because of the blind spot. And I thought, if humans were designed or if God guided evolution or anything, why would you miss a spot? Growing up, like, God was always there. Like, God was a physical presence my whole life. Like, I spoke to him, I prayed to him, I thought about him, I discerned what he wants to say, and suddenly, like, he wasn't there.
Sam was sent to Israel for further schooling without any books. He missed reading.
And I knew that on the border of the city that I lived in, there was a university. And I knew there have to be libraries there. So then one lunch break I walked, it was about a 40-minute walk. The walk itself felt like a crime because the yeshiva is actually placed on a mountain to discourage you to leave. Because you know that if you go down, you'll have to climb up, and the heat.
Sam started visiting the university library every week. In the city, he even bought a few books of his own. One was David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. Sam knows the opening line by heart. Whether I shall turn out to be the hero of my life, or whether that station will be held by anybody else, these pages must show. Until one day, the dean of Sam's school found out about the books. He was an old bearded man with an insatiable appetite for scripture. He delivered lectures across the Jewish world, and Sam looked up to him. The dean said that within one day, the books needed to be gone. Sam walked back to the library through the heat, and he approached the librarian, whom he'd never spoken to.
And I said, I study at Ultra Orthodox Yeshiva, and I have my books, and they threatened me, and I don't want to lose them. And she said, oh, sure. And she opened the cabinet under her desk and says, you can keep it here till you go home.
Not long after that, Sam did go home. He notified his parents and the school. And before he left, he went to visit the dean.
And the last night before I was going, I knocked on his door to say goodbye. He was about to appear, a big lecture he was going to give. He opens up, and I said to him, well, this is it. He says, oh, well, I hope you have success in whatever you endeavor. I said, who knows? And then he says, and I hope you stay with us. He meant religiously. I said, who knows? And then he opened his arm to give me a hug, but then he narrowed it and just shook my hand with both hands around one hand. And he said, Bracha Vatzlacha, blessings and good luck. And closed the door.
Sam's 25 now. Before he left Brooklyn, he had to sit through 8 hours of debate with a man trained to convince him to stay. When the man told him, you know you'll never make it, he thought about Hermione Granger, a Harry Potter character who makes it. She enters the magical world, and she thrives. On other days, he thought about David Copperfield, who runs away from home and starts a new life. And Remy the Rat from the film Ratatouille, who insists that even a rodent can become a cook. Silly as that might sound, these thoughts kept him going. I first met Sam about a year ago at a dinner party in Germany. I asked about his accent, which sounded to me like New York. I think about that now and imagine him sighing inwardly. This again. Before he could say a word about who he is, a stranger was asking him who he used to be. Sam's full story came out over the course of several meetings. It didn't have the eagerness and glee it had the first time he told it. Because Sam felt like he'd taken advantage of his own experience, converted it into social currency.
It feels ugly. It almost feels like I took my memories and I turned them into these, like, coins, you know, and the things that happened to you in your life shouldn't become that.
He kept hoping that he'd outgrow his past. 5 years after that first dinner party, he's still hoping. It feels like he's stuck in the epilogue of his old life.
The odd thing is that you wanted to leave and you go through this loneliness and you leave that world. But then the only thing that redeems you is that world. I didn't leave because I want to be someone who leaves. I don't think any of us do. We leave because we want to get to a new place and be in that place. I was a Hasidic boy, and now I'm a Hasidic boy who left. That's not different enough for me.
Sam tells his story eloquently, but reluctantly. He tells it because we want him to. Because we listen. But he wonders if the best possible ending will be the day he doesn't have to tell it at all.
Living by the Book. That was produced by Daniel A. Cross with Mark Don and Julie Shapiro.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio.